Welcome to Future Horizons, the Tempest podcast. I'm your host, Sevi Watmo. Delivering a sixth generation fighter jet by 2035 is an ambitious goal, which will require Team Tempest to utilise the full power of digitisation. In this episode, we explore the role that digitisation will play in developing a new fighter jet in half the time compared to previous generations of aircraft. We'll assess cultural assumptions about the risks of new digital capabilities and discuss how these could unlock huge gains in performance. Gareth Hetheridge is Director, Digital and IT at Leonardo UK, one of the core four British companies working on GCAP. Leonardo UK, along with its partner companies in Italy and Japan, is responsible for the new fighter jet's advanced electronics. Kate Robertson is Enterprise Enablement Director for Future Combat Air Systems at BAE Systems Air Division. BAE Systems is the UK's industry lead for the Global Combat Air Programme that will produce the Tempest fighter jet. David Bell is Future Combat Air System Chief Technologist for Mission Systems and Information at the UK Ministry of Defence. David is directing the technical strategy for this heavily digital part of the programme. So we've seen a surge in media interest in terms of the inherent risks associated with AI and digitisation. And when you look at the technology being developed by Team Tempest for programmes like GCAP, can you describe how you're addressing these risks, and can you elaborate on how digitisation will allow teams to accelerate the path of technology, starting with you, Gareth?
Absolutely. Good morning, all. Certainly from the risk side of things, I'm sure we'll cover some of it later around artificial intelligence and how we exploit that, but also ensure the right level of governance and safety is a massive topic, and I'm sure we'll get on to a little later. In terms of digitisation and what we're doing, our heavy focus really is on the data side of things. So how do we take an approach around data in what we call delivering enterprise advantage? So how we build it in the back office with our engineering and our operations teams.
Gareth, what does enterprise advantage mean?
Really, how do we ensure that all of our users across all of our factories in the UK are using data insights to drive advantage in their everyday, whatever they do in their factories, around engineering and operations. But what we're finding is we have a lot of experience in that space, but we're now finding we can take that same methodology and that same approach into the supportability of the asset itself to help our customer gain supportability advantage, and then also into the mission space as well. So many of the opportunities, the approach, the challenges across those three domains are very, very similar, and there's some great learning you could take across all three.
Kate, at BAE Systems, how are you creating opportunities for shared learning to accelerate the forward progress on the programme?
So shared learning is really important because we don't know what we don't know. And when you look at a sixth generation capability, the key thing to pull out here is we're not just talking about an air platform. What we are talking about is how we best pull the data together from all the sensors out there across the entire network and pull them into a format where people can make decisions and act on those decisions as quickly and as securely as possible. And therefore, ensuring that we're learning not just from each other within the programme, but also wider than the programme in terms of building an ecosystem to support us is really important. Now, it's a difficult journey in terms of building that ecosystem because it's an ecosystem that we're not that used to working with in defence. You know, we are now working with more partners on FCAS than we would usually work with at this stage in the programme. And we are still finding ways to really pull that knowledge into the programme and make sure we're acting on it. And it's also an absolute continuous process. It's not just something we can do at the beginning and say, right, we've pulled all the knowledge in now we'll just go off as defence primes and we'll build this platform. We've got to build an ecosystem whereby we're continually learning and continually innovating and pulling the best possible technology and digital expertise into the programme, because that's what our adversaries are doing. And that's how we can get that advantage that Gareth was talking about.
David, thinking about the MOD in terms of an enormous ecosystem with the digital side, but also the soldiers who are in the battlefield, how are you going to put digitization into their hands so that they feel confident about feeding into it and acting upon it?
Oh, well, yeah, there's a lot of challenge in trying to make sure that we can deliver a more advanced AI capability and supporting software tools in a way that's trusted and seen as resilient by the operators. We've learned some hard lessons from that in the past, and a large part of the focus on our program right now is in how do we structure the development program of all of these tools so that they can be proven to work in the kind of operating environments we're going to be working in. The solution to that is going to be developing them in quite an iterative way where we're constantly evolving and amending and adapting how they work, but also putting the users at the heart of that software development cycle. So making sure that our operators and our engineers and our personnel who represent the frontline actually get to be hands-on and involved in how that software behaves and how it works as we work it up, getting involved in every stage of the development cycle, really.
And certainly involvement seems to be a key element in terms of building trust. And GCAP is a three-nation program. And David, staying with you, historically, the more international partners on a program, the more complex and challenging it can become. How is the MOD embracing digital technology to help draw the nations together?
You're right there. I mean, there are significant benefits in having a highly collaborative program with lots of partners bringing their own skills and capabilities. But that does come with a lot of challenge in how you structure and coordinate people across that kind of enterprise. When you look at other big tech programs, such as the way that SpaceX or Tesla or even the F-35 program work, they have fairly centralized structures, lots of top-down coordination of their technology stacks, and that gives them quite efficient development across all of the products that they build. We're not working that way in GCAP. We have a lot of different partners that we're pulling together and trying to coordinate. So we're trying to work on how we leverage the benefits of our partnered approach and still behave as efficiently as a single company would. The solution to that is trying to put in place all the digital infrastructure we need to share and coordinate between the companies and the countries. We need to have digital design approaches such as model-based systems engineering to improve how we communicate across the partners and give everybody a shared formal engineering language to work with and minimize the misunderstandings. And we're also building tools and pipelines to standardize and automate our processes to let engineers around the world very quickly contribute to the coherent system that they need to deliver.
And Kate, is there, alongside the digital paths that David has just outlined, is there a cultural path you're pursuing in order to bring the nations together on this program?
Yes, there absolutely is. And I'd say culture is as always, the biggest challenge and the biggest opportunity to a program of this scale and size. We are working really hard at the moment in terms of identifying what the culture is that we need for the programme. I'm doing some specific benchmarking work around culture and how we pull that together. But the most important thing to do in order to build the right culture across the programme is awareness, understanding and working together. And one of the things that digital technology will never do is actually take away the importance of that face-to-face interaction to build those relationships and build that trust amongst the partners, which is absolutely critical to then enable the digital engineering side of it to work and enable that collaboration within that digital infrastructure. So the cultural journey is huge in terms of where we need to go in terms of operating as a single entity and to drive the program forwards, and is absolutely underpinned by trust and building that trust amongst the partners, building that trust with the MOD, because as David said, we're trying to work differently on this program, which means that we can't have the same kind of transactional relationships that might have existed on things like the F-35 program. We need those relationships to be transformational. We need to be working together to solve the problems we have, not as supplier, customer, not as different layers of the supply chain. So trust absolutely underpins the culture we're trying to build.
Gareth, what's some of the best practice in terms of international collaboration that Leonardo will be putting forward as part of this journey?
Well, I think a couple of things, and just to kind of reiterate some of the things Kate said, I mean, I think all of us on this call are going to advocate for digital technology transforming a business, because that's the roles we're in. And I certainly think that digital technology can really drive, or technology can really drive the transformation this program needs and be key to its success. But it is only going to be a proportion of it. You can never drive a transformation just from digital technology, and that cultural change, building the digital data literacy within all employees that are involved in the program, all of those various entities are absolutely crucial. So I think we'll always advocate for technology being a key driver, but they can never be the whole answer to this challenge, but certainly a key part. I think in terms of some of the key areas, it's the biggest challenge we have and the biggest opportunity internationally is how do we ensure that we secure data, share data in a secure manner? So how do we ensure that data that is relevant for that individual in the right time and space and context, they can access it when they need to? So David talked around model-based systems engineering. How do we change one parameter in the design envelope that impacts somebody else, which may be in a different geography or in a different part of the platform? In Leonardo, we talk a lot around iSankey, which is the integrated sensors and non-kinetic effects, which is effectively the product that Leonardo provides into the platform. So how does a change or a parameter in that envelope change something in Kate's world in BAE, for example? And that's really, really important. So getting that right is the biggest challenge I think we face at the moment, but also the biggest opportunity when we get it right.
So building on what Gareth has said about the importance of investing in greater connectivity and the sharing of information, David, can you talk about the challenges you've identified in the typical adoption of digitization in a defence setting and how these can be overcome?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the drive across most of the commercial world for a long time has been on sharing data, pooling it together, analysing big pools of data, and improving your engineered products by having more eyes on the information that you have and getting better use out of the information you have. And that is quite sticky to apply in a defence setting where we do need to really protect our programme and make sure we are clear on who has access to what information and how it's being managed across the programme. So we're putting in place lots of checks and balances to protect our information. Those kind of frameworks do make our digital ecosystem a lot more challenging. But frankly, if we don't have a secure program, then we might as well not bother trying to build an aeroplane. So our approach to this is really trying to take the best tools and processes that the commercial world has and trying to apply them in a resilient and secure way. So putting the right protections in the right places without losing too many of those benefits. This is all being underpinned by secure by design approaches to bake security in from the start of our program, and things like zero trust architectures to make sure that only the right people in the right systems have access to information and tools. But ultimately, all of this boils down to very careful design of how information is managed across the program. And where we can, we're going to use kind of modern security management tools and processes to underpin that and automate as much as we can.
Kate, how do you strike that crucial balance between the all-important security aspect and this new climate of collaboration?
So it's all about understanding the threat and therefore being able to manage the risk. You know, within the defence, everyone within defence is very good at managing risk on almost a daily basis. You know, every decision that is made from an operational perspective is made on a balance of probabilities. And we need to take the same approach with security. When we talk about understanding the threat, that means we need to continuously understand the threat. And we need to make sure that we're monitoring that and building that knowledge, not just in terms of our security experts who then write policy that we then comply with, but ensuring all our team have an understanding of the threat so that then when they are making decisions on a daily basis in their own sphere of influence, they are able to think about what's the threat, therefore what's the risk, what's the risk if I don't do it from an operational basis, and therefore how do I make the decision on how to proceed. So really, in terms of making sure that we maintain the balance between the confidentiality, integrity and accessibility of that data, it all comes down to people in the end, and making sure that we have the education and the training for our people to give us that advantage, because the advantage in security comes from the human edge as well. You know, we absolutely need to use all the modern tools, and as David said, we're trying to pull as much of that into the program as possible, But in the end, people are always generally the weakest link in any chain that you have. And therefore, making sure that we're educating our teams and making sure that we're taking that risk-based approach to security is how we're going to deliver a different program.
And that human element in the digital sphere is a core theme of the book, The Age of AI and Our Human Future by Henry Kissinger, Daniel Schmidt and Daniel Huttenlocher. And they start by sharing the example of a chess game where the computer comes up with moves never conceived of before by the human mind. Gareth, how can digitization open up new realms of approaches and help Team Tempest pioneer specialist engineering life cycles in the digital and physical world?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I would say, firstly, in terms of books, there is a huge amount of books available at the moment on an AI and some of the challenges of it, which I would highly recommend anybody, if not already. You know, it's certainly very mainstream in the media, and there's a lot out there, and there is some great reading material. I would summarise, even before we get onto AI, we're seeing this right now in our respective companies. So many of us are working on data from how do we automate and drive efficiencies into our business to drive out some of the more mundane reporting that happens before and automate much of that. But we're also starting to use data science at scale to come up with new insights that humans had never come up with before. So by taking data from various different sources and being able to provide some really quite complex data science type techniques, we're creating new insights that we never come up with before. As we start to move into a world of AI, you can do that much, much more quickly. So it absolutely is going to be a key tenet of us moving forward. We are already seeing it, and we're already seeing some of the benefits right now, which I think is hugely exciting. What we need to ensure we do is get on top of the regulation challenges around it, and make sure that as we start to really grow large language models and move more into the AI space, that we are training people in the right way and ensuring the training data that is being used to teach those models, we can have the right accountability and responsible and transparent nature of AI. Really understand the lineage of the data, how it's being trained, and therefore we can trust that model is going to be absolutely crucial going forward. But I would say, you know, whilst there is a lot of mainstream discussion in the media around AI at the moment, there are elements we are doing right now on the Tempest programme that are really, really exciting.
Kate, what's some of the exciting activity taking place in connection with AI and digitisation at BAE?
So as Gareth says, it's something that's actually been around for quite some time. It's very popular in modern media right now. But as companies and as defence, we've been looking at AI and how to bring that in and data from the outset. As a Tempest partnership, we are currently doing a lot of research around the software development and how to accelerate that using AI and using data. But it also goes through to our engineering aspects, which is where we're really talking about, you know, how can we use some of these developments to help us identify faults that we might not have previously identified until much later in the development process. And those faults, we have aircraft flying today where the faults were or errors were identified so late in the production process that actually the cost of reworking those was absolutely prohibitive. So what we had to do is we have to operate the aircraft today with those faults there. So things like using AI is exploring actually how can we shift everything left. So we shift that fault identification left, which then means A, we can rectify it and it will drive down the cost of the program, but also helping to make the capability better. I think a key aspect of this is going back to David's point around user centricity. User centricity is absolutely critical for this. And we're not just talking about a few data scientists holed up in a room doing some analysis work to identify these things. It's really about getting the tools into the hands of the users, because we don't know what we don't know. And the people who are best placed to solve some of these problems are the people who are using the systems and the engineering tools on a day-to-day basis. So we're really trying to explore, right, how do we build that user centricity? How do we look at that citizen developer process so that we not only address some of our skills challenges, but we can also make sure that we're pushing all the tools into the hands of the people who actually experience the problems that we need to solve on a daily basis?
And machine learning hasn't yet overtaken the human mind in terms of decision making, but one of the elements of the fourth industrial revolution is cobotics, robots that are specially designed to interact physically with humans in collaborative environments. And GCAP is expected to take advantage of this new model of manufacturing, bringing closer connectivity between machines, robots and humans. And indeed, BAE Systems is doing quite advanced work in this area, isn't it, Kate?
Yeah, so we have our factory of the future, which is essentially looking at using robotics to build elements of the aircraft, and actually already is building elements of Tempest using robotics. The best bit to illustrate your point though about the cobiotics is that if you watch a video of how the process works over time, what you see is actually that seamless integration of the people and the robots. There are always people, you know, on the platform or on the shop floor with the robots, checking things, identifying things, you know, looking at things, all of those aspects. So it is very much about that integration. I mean, what it enables is absolutely massive in terms of, you know, the customization, in terms of the rapid prototyping, in terms of the precision elements. But I think that the key thing is the point you pulled out there, that this is just changing the way we work and using the robots to really enhance that, and working with the robots, not just replacing humans with robots.
Gareth, although there are pockets of excellence in cobotics, if you're looking out across industry, in terms of the perception of our sophisticated use of cobotics in the present day and the reality, how far apart do you think they are?
As Kate said, I think there is a really good example, certainly across the enterprise, where we're doing this already. But that last point is the key one, which is as we move into Generation Tempest, we will see an increasing amount of coexistence between technology and humans. And that could be in the robotics and the cobotic space in manufacturing, as Kate's just alluded to, or it could be in the AI space, it could be in data, it's going to be all of the above. So ensuring that we are building the curriculum so that all of our users are much more comfortable with coexisting with technology as that technology matures is going to be key. And we see it in our home lives every day at the moment, and it's going to be something we absolutely need to master in the enterprise as well.
David, to what degree is the MOD exploring cobotics right now?
I think we're quite interested in the potential opportunities from the interactions between humans and robotics across the programme. There's not going to be one size fits all here. It's going to be kind of looking at where are there aspects of physical humans doing jobs that need augmentation through machines. And that's where we're really trying to drive this. But we're not trying to be dogmatic about this. We're not trying to say, okay, well, we need to replace humans' jobs with robotics or just build them for the sake of them. It's really about trying to figure out where are our people trying to do quite challenging tasks that really are best to automate or best to augment with the machine, and then direct the highly automated activities at those tasks. I guess it's worth highlighting that the machine-led robotics is just the sharp and pointy end of the digital ecosystem that spans the whole program. So we need software human interactions right across our program, from the tools that our engineers use to understand the behaviors of our systems, the pilots trying to figure out how to prototype systems and how well they'll behave, the designers trying to understand how they manufacture components and ensure they can be maintained and upgraded. There's a lot of human software interaction at all levels, including the physical aspects with the robotics.
And if you had to say the one thing that a programme needs to succeed from a digital perspective, what, David, would you say that it is, and how are you addressing that?
I guess from my point of view, we've talked about it a lot today, but it's really about the people. It's about making sure we've got a digital ecosystem that empowers people in doing their work. This isn't really about waving a digital magic wand and making our engineering problems disappear. AI isn't going to come along and build the aeroplane for us. Digital is really about giving our teams the tools and the processes they need to do their job and empowering those teams to apply them in the most effective way. So much of our program is very unique and specialist. You can't just pull together a generic set of digital processes and lay them over everything that we need to do and hope they'll work. So this is really about bringing our specialists and our engineers on the journey and putting them in the driving seat of how to adopt those new tools and processes and technologies to get their own unique jobs done.
Kate, from your point of view, what would it be?
It's always better to go first on these, isn't it? Because David very much stole my answer there. But I couldn't agree with him more around the people. And one aspect that comes with that is I think on this programme, we really need bold leadership. You know, we are trying to do something that we haven't done from a UK perspective for a very long time. And we have never done working with the partners that we're trying to work with at the scale we're trying to work with from a digital engineering perspective. You know, what we are trying to do with MBSE really is unparalleled, whether in the defence sector or in the commercial sector. And therefore, that takes some risk. And we are going to have to take risk. And with that comes the need for leadership to be bold in their decision making, to accept that things are going to go wrong and we're going to have to learn from them quickly and adapt and overcome. But really willing to push the boundaries of what we do currently in defence and what we're uncomfortable with. And I think that that phrase kind of being comfortably uncomfortable is really key in this. You know, if we're feeling too comfortable as a leadership team, then we're doing it wrong. We need to be feeling uncomfortable with this. And therefore, that means that we are actually going to develop something that is sixth generation. Because if we're comfortable, then we're just going to develop what we've always developed.
Gareth, what does it all come down to from your perspective?
I'll stay on the people theme, but absolutely building a diverse team, and that talks about sort of generational diversity, gender diversity, but also diversity from different backgrounds, and not just having people who've come from a traditional defence background is going to be incredibly important. And we've seen some real benefits of bringing people from the hotel trade or automotive or financial services into our teams. I would talk about where we are at the moment is defence has a unifying purpose. Everyone within the defence industry buys into what we do and why we do what we do. Secondly, we have some of the biggest and most exciting engineering and scientific challenges. Now we're able to augment that with some real cutting edge cloud-based data analytics tools. And I think that provides a fantastic opportunity for people to overcome some of those wicked challenges in the context of defence with cutting edge digital tools.
Gareth, Kate and David, great to speak to you today. Thank you very much.
Join us again for the next episode of Future Horizons, the Tempest podcast.